There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Monday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad to have you along. And checking that radar, you heard Dr. Bill said expect those showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Heck, they've been rolling throughout the morning and continuing into the afternoon. Quick check of radar. Pretty much Mobile and Baldwin County, some areas a little less rain than others, but we're all getting it right now, and it's continuing to come off the Gulf. We'll get more from Dr. Bill and our forecast coming up at around 12:35. Also, Todd Stasey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, joins us here shortly, and been monitoring the procession here as Representative John Lewis, who was, of course, here in Alabama, lying in state at the Capitol Montgomery yesterday, now on his way to lie in state at the Capitol in Washington. And they have that procession going on with the hearse, and it's making its way throughout Washington, D.C., and now it looks like approaching the Capitol at this point, but we'll talk about that more. The civil rights icon, Alabamian John Lewis, laying in state in the Capitol. Talk about that with Todd coming up. Also, maybe we'll get him for his reaction here on what happened mid-morning. Now, we had the heads up here that the ABC board was going to meet and make some recommendations and make some rules here, and that they have done as the meeting is over now. And last call, 11 o'clock. So that's the move they made. Last call, 11 o'clock. ABC board has restricted alcohol sales to 11 p.m. Okay, here's a story from our news partners at WKRG. Says the Alabama Alcoholic Beverage Control Board voted Monday morning to restrict alcohol sales in the state's bars and restaurants. Okay, so this is the whole state. Board held an emergency meeting during which they voted to order bars and restaurants to stop selling alcohol at 11 p.m. All alcohol must be consumed by 11:30 p.m. Go. Bars and restaurants will be able to stay. I added that. Bars and restaurants will be able to stay open after that time, but patrons will not be able to drink alcohol. They're saying, of course, this is out of concern for the health and safety of the general public, the licensees, and other key stakeholders. So that's why ABC, Alabama Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, approved their emergency order. Word here from the ABC chairperson, Colonel Alan Spencer, said the primary mission of Alabama ABC Board is to protect the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens, and we take this mission very seriously. This is, we are very sensitive to the economic impact this rule will have. This is a gut-wrenching decision we are making today, but it's also a gut-wrenching decision to see the number of Alabamians who are suffering from this disease. On balance, I'm compelled to vote in favor of the rule. This will be a very short duration and will relieve this restriction as soon as possible, end quote. Emergency rules effective immediately will not be enforced, though. It's effective, but not enforceable until Saturday. So August 1st, Saturday, beginning at 11 p.m. On Saturday, all ABC licensees are required to cease service and sale of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m., with on-premise consumption to end at 11:30. Now, but this is okay. You can still do the curbside, is what I'm saying. You can still do the curbside alcohol sales. But this is one of these things where, you know, if they're going to make it 11 o'clock, if 11 o'clock is going to keep people, if stopping alcohol sales, even though the people don't have to leave the restaurant, they just can't buy alcohol. If somehow they can't buy alcohol after 11, that's going to improve the situation. Why wouldn't it be 10:30? Why wouldn't it be 10? The state is going to head and tell telling private business when they need to stop selling a particular part of their menu. Why is the time 11? You know, at that point, but they're saying in this in the meeting, they said alcohol, and I'm paraphrasing here, lowers inhibitions, and therefore maybe people would not keep their social distancing or something like that. But that's the rule as it was rolled out this morning. ABC board. And they're saying no, starting officially today, enforceable on Saturday, no alcohol sales after 11 p.m. And if you bought that last round at 11, you have to have it consumed by 11:30. So, all right. Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, joins us next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Good to talk to my buddy Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, online, aldailynews.com. Hey, Todd.
How's it going, Sean?
It's going all right. And, right now, on one of my monitors, I'm watching the motorcade with the body of John Lewis heading towards the Capitol, where he will lie in state. It has been a tour. I'm trying to stay respectful here, but a heck of a tour for the body of John Lewis. I mean, over the weekend, we're watching the horse-drawn caisson pull the casket of John Lewis across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, then on to Montgomery, now on to Washington, and he ends up back in Georgia later this week.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, quite the tour. And I mean, we're lucky for it. I'm really glad that his family and all that who are involved made Troy and, of course, Selma and Montgomery a part of that tour. It allowed so many people here to pay their respects in person. And I mean, even yesterday in Montgomery, it was hot. It started raining pretty bad, and still they said about 3,000 people stood in line to go see him at the state capitol, and that doesn't include Selma and Troy. Of course, you know, they had to kind of social distance, but plenty of crowds there. So, you know, it's an ambitious tour to say the least, but I'm really glad that Alabama played a central role. Not only is he from Alabama, but so much of the work he did took place right here.
No, absolutely. And you talk about the crowds there. I mean, with whatever, with coronavirus and what's happening right now, to have a crowd that size is very significant. And I want to talk more about Montgomery's portion, but watching that horse-drawn carriage come across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and the moment of silence that was there, I thought was, for me, extremely touching.
It really was, and again, how lucky we are to be a part of that, to see it live. I'm glad they chose to do all that, to make it a big deal. You know, there are probably a lot of young people that don't know who John Lewis is, too young to really have grown up in it or to even study it. And so the good thing, I mean, as sad as it is to lose an icon like that, the good thing is so many more people will know about exactly where he came from, why he got involved in nonviolent resistance, and why it was important, why people couldn't vote back then, what the struggle was all about, and why they crossed that bridge. So, you know, it's encouraging to me that just all this being on TV, I mean, so prominent, you know, maybe people will get at a computer and search a little bit and read some history to know, hey, it wasn't all that long ago where some pretty bad injustices happened, and there were people that stood up to him, like John Lewis.
You know, I wonder if what you're saying is happening with the with protests going on, but I think beyond that, the rioting going on in places. I mean, the protests, legitimate protests in some places, a lot of places, you have that. On top of that, you have the rioting. I wonder if people will look at this and say exactly what you said. Look at the look at the state of Alabama where this went down, and look at the honor and reverence given to John Lewis to Lyon State at the Capitol in Montgomery. I wonder if that will change some hearts, or at least open some eyes.
Yeah, you know, I have the same thought, because, look, you know, we're at least a month or two out of the real George Floyd protests, and so much of that was just a reaction, you know. But what's going on in Portland and what's going on in some of these cities now has nothing to do with George Floyd. It has nothing to do with racial unrest. It's anarchists. And, you know, I'd like to think, yeah, they could go and take a look at history and read about John Lewis and the nonviolent way that he and Dr. King and so many others, stood up to systematic repression, of especially of voting rights. And they would learn something. So maybe so. But, there's a riot, there's a protest culture out there that for whatever reason just wants to be in your face. To I'm seeing things drawn on buildings, like, you know, kill judges and kill prosecutors, we're going to burn down this courthouse, and I don't know why. I don't know what the reason is for. The thing about John Lewis and that civil rights movement is the why was always clear. They always knew what they were fighting for, what they were marching for, mm-hmm. what they were beaten and hosed for. I hope people do look it up, and especially for that reason. They never lost sight of why they were resisting, and they never lost sight of keeping it nonviolent.
I want to go to a couple other subjects here in the state that people can read more about over at aldailynews.com. The school question is a big one here, and Eric Mackey on Friday estimating what half the state's public school students are going to be attending classes remotely this fall. This goes back to a conversation you and I had about rural broadband and a lot more.
Yeah, and look, I'm not surprised to see Mackey say that. I mean, one by one, we've been seeing school districts. I think Mobile was the first to say, hey, mm-hmm. we're not going to open up all the way here in a couple of weeks. We're going to need some time and maybe do a hybrid where some of it is online and some of it's in school. I'm not surprised by that. You've got a lot of concerns from not just educators, but staff, parents. So I think what Mackey's saying is, number one, you've got a lot of large systems, including Mobile, that are not going to start in classroom teaching on time. At the same time, you've got a lot of parents, even in schools that are going to start on time, to say, hey, we're going to hold back. That's why, or hold our kids at home so they can do online learning. That's a choice they wanted to give parents this year. They have contracted with this company to build this online learning portal. I still haven't seen it. I don't know who has, but I mean, we're really all trusting that this online learning portal actually works. But here's the problem, Sean. You and I both know that all online learning is not created equal. Right. If you have parents that, you know, are able to be home and are able to maybe help you, guide you through some of this online learning, then great. But not everybody has that. And so I'm worried about the disparity that happens with, you know, okay, yeah, well, let's all just go online and learn. Well, some kids aren't going to learn the same way that others do. And so I'm worried about, you know, really perpetuating how some kids fall behind and stay behind. I'm worried about that with this school year with a hybrid option.
You know, I've mentioned this just anecdotally. In my house, I have one that did okay with it and one that did not do okay with it when at the end of this last school year with the online learning. So it's a big concern to me. It's also a big concern, you say, will they be left behind, or will they be moved on without having the skill set they need going forward? In other words, will accommodations, and I don't know how that would be done, but accommodations be made that the child doesn't score where they need to, but then maybe there's let's factor in the fact it was online, and in reality the kid did not get the information. You know, they didn't learn. They didn't learn what they needed to. And then we're looking at the next school year, and do we have this deficiency that runs through their, you know, through their whole matriculation?
Yeah, we were already worried about that with because COVID hit, you know, middle of March. Everybody, most people were on spring break, and they just never came back from spring break. And some people did online, and you know, that's good for people that were able to do it. But of course, you've got broadband issues. People don't even have access to high-speed internet. So we were already worried about people, or about students, kind of having a gap in their instruction and in their education. And I'm worried about that again this year. Look, we've talked about everything. We've talked about parents as far as going back to work or not. We've talked about teachers and their concerns. We've even talked about students and their health. One thing we haven't talked about in all this is the best thing for students education-wise and what's, you know, how we're going to help them, you know, learn and get good instruction to where they can actually, you know, be productive adults. That needs to be a part of this conversation. I know it's not an easy one. I don't have all the answers. I know Kay Ivey and Dr. Mackey, they don't either, but we ought to be talking about that as part of the conversation.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the science of it is what is also confusing, because I'll hear a story that says, listen, the younger the children have, the best immunity to it, right? It doesn't hurt them near as much. And I heard another story saying that they are also, because of that, I guess, at a lower level of transmitting the coronavirus. So I don't know what the right answer is, because the way this has been, in 2 weeks there could be another set of studies that completely contradicts that. But if you have these kids, unless these kids truly are going to be in their homes and never going anywhere, right, for the entire school year, if they're never going anywhere but their home or their backyard, but you're going to tell them they can't go to school, I think we're looking at a lot of liability. I think we're looking at school systems trying to cover their backside. That's what I kind of feel from this.
I've been hearing a lot about that, and, you know, that goes back to, you know, the state wanted to pass, or a lot of lawmakers wanted to pass that immunity bill before the session ended. But the word from the House was no. We're only going to do budget bills. Remember that? They wanted to do that.
Yep.
An immunity bill to basically keep folks from frivolous lawsuits. That might be at play here. And I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it is delaying a little, you know, further. Maybe it is doing hybrid. I don't know. My point is this: let's not just go online, say we're doing online learning, and pretend that fixes the problem, because it doesn't. A lot of kids don't have access to online. A lot of kids don't have the parental support in order to do online. So let's not just, you know, flip that switch and say, oh, it's okay, don't worry about coming to school because we're all online. It doesn't hit everybody the same way.
Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. This is also dancing around the subject of rural broadband. You mentioned it. I mean, you can't hardly go online in the state of Alabama, not see an ad on a, you know, any kind of political sign, people pushing for rural broadband. Hey, where's the governor on this? Have we heard anything more, if she's going to put any kind of money out there?
Well, she included all broadband, educational broadband, in that first sort of tranche of grant. So we know, I think that was a couple $100 million. I don't know exactly how that's going to be spent. I just know that was
my question, right? She said she was going to do that, but does that mean that, you know, this group or that group or current cable providers or somebody else is going to get into this? What does it look like? Because it has to be done by the 28th of December, right?
Yeah, and that's a good question, Sean, because even when the state, these last 2 years, passed two different bills basically spur the development of rural broadband, and it was really complicated because, I mean, you have these existing cable companies who don't really want competition, you know, the big boys especially, and you're agreeing to give grants to smaller companies basically to run these lines. Well, how much does that cut into the, you know, to the market share of a company that enjoys their market share? So, I mean, you got a lot of competing factors at play. I think, though, we've reached a point, especially amid coronavirus, that it's no longer we wish we could do this. We want to take care of everybody and make sure everybody's okay in their companies and everything. This is an imperative. You know, it's going to take public spending. It's going to take a lot of it, and it's probably going to take some, you know, crossing of the lines to make sure that, okay, everybody has to at least come into contact with high-speed internet. I mean, we're just talking about schools. How can we ever, and trust me, this shift to online is going to happen more and more and more. So how can we ever say that we actually offer everybody the same kind of opportunity to learn if we don't offer them access to high-speed internet? It's not an easy proposition, but it's one we can probably fix. We fixed infrastructure issues before. We have to all the time. This is an infrastructure issue that we can fix, but I think it's going to have to take not just federal money, but a big-time state commitment.
That's going to be the question on that. Coming right back, more Todd Stacy, aldailynews.com. We'll talk about getting signed up for his email so you can get it in your inbox 6 days a week. That's coming up when we come back from the news update and Dr. Bill's forecast.
With Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, and continue our conversation with Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Todd, tell folks how to get signed up for the email.
It's really easy, and the best part is it's free. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. And if you click subscribe at the very top, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. We send out a daily newsletter where you get all the information that you need, whether it's from Alabama politics or national politics. Go down the list of all the different public publications from around the state. So it pays to subscribe.
All right. Looking at some texts that came in here, this one from Mr. Valentine said, great, now the free food, free rent, free cell phone group will get free home internet, free laptops while I pay for everything. It's not exactly. Let's go back to that state angle of it, because the money that would be applied here that has been applied from the governor is money that has to be applied to coronavirus relief, right? That $1.8 billion the state got in CARES Act 1, the original, it has to be used for coronavirus relief. And I know we've hiring some nurses for schools, doing some things like that. Doesn't this fall under that? Doesn't this rural broadband initiative, isn't that what they hope that it falls under that?
Yeah, the only problem is it's supposed to be spent already. And you know, how do you by December, you know, run cable lines out to, you know, DeKalb County? It's tough to do that. Or I guess down there you'd say, you know, Washington or Clark County. And I would just say, you know, I don't think this is about free stuff. I mean, if anything, it's Republicans in the legislature that have been mm-hmm. talking about this for a long time. You talk about rural Alabama, you know, all types of folks live in rural Alabama, and you'd be surprised. You know, I know we're on radio, but we've got a map that the state has that shows areas that are basically deserts of internet, you know, high-speed internet. And you'd be surprised learning about.
I wouldn't. I spent enough time in the country
on the list of not having internet access. So it's a larger problem than you might think. And I don't think it's about free service or anything like that. In fact, I think what you're talking about is companies coming in to provide a service that people pay for. What they don't have is that last mile. They don't have the incentive to run cable, you know, from the big cities, from the interstate, out to these places. They need incentive to do that. That's what they're talking about. I think these are all paying customers. There's just not enough of them to make it a business stuff.
Right. I mean, those of us in the you know, spend time in the country, realize it is that last mile or the last five or whatever it's just not available. You know, we use some satellite, you know, and some different things, but it's not the same. You don't get the same speeds.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's what the state is talking about. You know, Del Marsh, the leader of the Senate, he wanted to use a significant amount of the state COVID money to pay for all this, but the plan wasn't there to really make sure it all gets done by December. That's another thing we should talk about. I expect there's going to be a lot more conversation in Congress about extending the deadline on this money, or at least relaxing the rules. Because I don't think we're the only ones dealing with this uncertainty here. How do we use this money to, you know, put it to our good use if we've got to spend it by December 30th? Or can we spend it, meaning, you know, give it to a company to do all this work, and then the work happens later? Those are questions we don't really know the answers to.
Okay. Yeah, one of the ideas I had had a while back, and I don't know if this works, but what about some kind of almost like rural electrification? You fund and form groups to do this work, even though you haven't, you know, you don't pay them for the, because they don't have time to run the wires and do all that. You form these groups, you fund them, and then their job is to perform the task of, if Congress doesn't extend the date.
Right. I mean, that's what people are talking about right now, is can we get this money out the door in terms of the state so that it technically is past the deadline, but the work doesn't exactly happen. Laying cable, backhoes in the dirt, you know, that kind of thing, because that's unfeasible, right? That's not even feasible. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll get some answers from the Treasury Department. But again, I think Congress probably should take another look at this. Why go do another CARES Act? They're talking about CARES 2 now, and spend another couple of trillion dollars when the trillions you've already allocated are tied up with red tape. You know, maybe address that first.
Yeah, right. Spend that money. Wait a second. Spend that money that has already been allocated before you run another tranche of money. But it, you know, I don't know exactly what comes out of CARES 2 today, but the statewide, at least for Alabama, and like you said, other states are in the same situation, instead of putting more money out, extend the deadline. I mean, it just makes sense.
I think so. And I've heard our representatives talk about that because they're hearing from the state saying, hey, We'd love to fix a big problem here, not just for coronavirus, but for going forward in the broadband issue. But hey, the rules say we have to spend this money. Why, you know, can't we get some flexibility? You know, I think it's possible because we've got a really strong delegation. A lot of them have pretty strong ties with the Trump administration. We've got Richard Shelby, who chairs appropriations. You know, funny things get put into appropriations bills sometimes. So, you know, we're in a good spot to do it. The question is, can we communicate clearly and get answers clearly enough in time to actually have a plan to spend this money? Look, December's going to be here before you know it, and we're all focused on the election. So we need folks to really hone in on this and say, okay, is this a reality? Can we feasibly plan to get broadband everywhere? And if so, let's go do it. If not, let's not waste our time.
Yeah, I do want to get to the election in a second, but I want to circle back to CARES 2. You know, it was last week there was a lot of discussion about the liability protection, and then I hear Mnuchin, and over the weekend it sounded like all the conversation was about the $1,200 checks. It was about other parts of this. Where do we stand with that liability?
Well, Senator McConnell, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, has said from the very beginning that there will not be a bill that passes the Senate if it doesn't have that liability protection in there. Now, McConnell doesn't always talk like that. You know, he rarely puts down ultimatums like that. So it was really interesting to me that he laid that down. So I fully expect him to go to the wall on that. And, you know, he may have to give up things to do it. They have to concede certain things to the Democratic House in order to do it. I happen to think that liability protection is that important. You do what you have to do to get it. Because I think we're not, and we've talked about this before, Sean, nobody's really talking about it now, but that's the next wave, right?
Yes.
You think business is hard now for some of these, you know, retailers and other companies that are trying to reopen. Wait until the lawsuits start flying. Wait until lawyer bills start climbing up there, and that will happen.
The vaccine for the economy, right? I mean, we're working on Operation Warp Speed and the vaccine for coronavirus. The vaccine for the economy is this liability protection.
I think it's a big part of it. Yeah, look, I'll give Congress credit. I think what they did with Paycheck Protection Program was brilliant. It kept the economy afloat, kept a lot of the people afloat in terms of paychecks. This could be the same thing. And, you know, Democrats are going to call it a giveaway. They're going to say, well, you're giving away your rights. You're not allowing, you know, the court system to be a place of redress. I don't think that's what they're after at all. They're talking about frivolous lawsuits, you know, protecting businesses from racking up the kind of legal costs that can really put you under. So I think it's really important. I expect Senator McConnell to go to the wall on this one.
All right, let's talk about election time. And you see the polls, which, I mean, I don't know what kind of credence to put in polls anymore. Maybe if you get a plurality of polls saying one thing, it's worth noticing. And Joe Biden up in some very key states for President Trump, stuff states that put him in office. What's going on there? Where do you think they're going to the mattresses? Or do you think they're in that mode yet inside the administration?
Yeah. Well, for one thing, they, you know, replaced the campaign manager. That's always the first indication that things aren't going well. And I think that was probably a good move. The guy they replaced Pascal with really has a history of being more even keel. And so maybe that'll work out. Look, I don't think there's any disputing that the trends have trended badly for President Trump over the last couple of months. He's got plenty of time to come back. And, you know, I'm not worried about I don't put any credence on national polls. I mean, there's one showing he was down 12 or down 13 nationally. That doesn't matter. But what does matter is these state polls. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, all states that the last really couple of rounds of polling from those states has been really disappointing for Donald Trump. He can't win the presidency. He cannot win re-election without those states. A lot can happen. You're seeing, I mean, look, the things we're talking about now, we weren't even talking about 2 weeks ago. And this thing churns and churns. And look at what's going on in Portland and Seattle and some of these places. I saw somebody tweet the other day that all those Portland protesters might as well put MAGA hats on because they're doing the work of reelecting the president. The more they protest, the more they try to light courthouses on fire. If that reaches ahead, you never know what direction that'll push the election. But they've got some time to correct. But it would be a mistake for anybody to say, "Oh no, these polls don't matter." They do, and how you know is the president has changed his behavior, going back to the daily briefings. I think that's a good call. And you know, when he was given those daily briefings, Sean, every day, he was controlling the narrative. Now, sometimes he screwed up. And that's, you know, people misspeak. But he was really controlling the information and controlling the airwaves. Once he stopped doing that and only went to Twitter, things kind of went south for him.
You know, I wonder, you talk about like a Michigan, a Pennsylvania, those kind of states. Is it just a mobilization of the Democrats in those states? Because I can't see how the people that came out to vote in 2016 for Trump in those states are not satisfied. I mean, with the exception of the coronavirus, which is not the doing of the president, you know, I don't know how they're not satisfied with their results so far. I mean, I don't know what's changed that they're not happy with.
Well, by all accounts, he was cruising to reelection in February, right? I mean, historic economy. And especially in those places we just talked about, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, his approval was strong enough to warrant re-election, and there was nothing that was going to change that. If anything, it was the Democrats who were falling over each other, trying to nominate the right person and, you know, trying not to screw up their nominating process. So, yeah, coronavirus absolutely changed everything. How he handled it changed everything. I thought it was really good in the beginning. But it kind of fell off the rails there. Same thing with the George Floyd stuff. Two incidents that were absolutely not his doing, but it's not what happened, it's how you respond to it. And I think, sure, he's been mischaracterized in the press plenty, but he's also done plenty to harm himself. And I don't know how many times we can say it, but somebody should take away his phone because he does more harm than good on Twitter. But as far as the demographics, it's, you know, suburban women, he's always had a problem, or that's always been a battleground, and he's losing suburban women. He's also losing older voters, and that's interesting. I think that must be...
Yeah, that surprised me. Yeah, the older voters,
we'll see. There's a long time to go, but those are two groups he can't do without. You know, white suburban women and over 65. That's his bread and butter. And but again, there's plenty of time, and sometimes it's better to run against something than it is to run for it. You know what I mean? So if these Yahoos keep acting up out west, you know, maybe he has something to run against.
Yeah, law and order. It may be what carries him across the finish line. And I know we're running late, but just before we finish up, ABC board says they're going to make a difference for COVID cases by shutting down booze sales at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, it seems like it's arbitrary, but.
Well, I mean, I think, and 11 was a compromise. Remember, they wanted to go to 10. I don't know. Can't do 10. I mean, look, is an hour going to make that much of a difference? I don't know. I'm not going to bars right now. And anybody that knows me up here, you know I like to frequent my local haunts. I'm not going to bars right now because it's an enclosed space. I just don't feel that comfortable in there. But I don't think the state's going to make a difference by backing them off by an hour. If anything, if it's that concerning, then have a curfew and say, okay, nobody can be out, not just at bars, but anywhere past 10 or whatever it is.
You can be out here, you just can't be drinking. And the last one, do you think what happens here at the end of the week? Do you think Governor extends the mask mandate and the safer at home order?
I think she extends the mask mandate. We're just now seeing in the last couple of days of data the results maybe of it, and it's trending down, which is good. But I fully expect her to issue it at least another 2 weeks. The question then becomes school, because that applies to schools. So that may be a bugaboo, but I see no reason for her not to extend the order.
All right. We'll have to get you back on very soon to talk more about the Senate race. It's Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Todd, thank you for your time.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, will do. And remember, go over to aldailynews.com. Get signed up for Todd's super email 6 days a week. Get it right there. Just sign up over at aldailynews.com. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, big thank you, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, for joining us on Midday Mobile. Text line's open for you at 343-0106. Steve says, how about covering the medical cost of the essential workers if they come down with COVID after going back to work? What about their liability? You know, here's the thing. I think the cases, Steve, will be one for anybody to be able to say, well, they got COVID from having to go back to work. You could get it from the grocery store, get it from a door handle, you get it anywhere. I think what the small businesses, and I think all businesses fear, is being tied up in court. And lawyers' fees on this. I think that's one of the things that has a chilling effect on getting the economy rolling back. I think that's it's a key. I think wearing masks, I've said this before, that those who don't want to wear masks, I would argue that maybe wearing masks is the way to get the economy back rolling. And it's also, if you're somebody who supports President Trump, wants him reelected, it's probably your best way to get him reelected, is to have an economy that is moving along. And the fundamentals of the economy haven't changed. It's just the scenario with having a pandemic to deal with. All right, coming up next hour, we want to roll this out in the first segment of next hour. We're going to talk with senior pastor at Harvest Church, Kevin Cooley, and Barry McLean, lay leader at Church of the Highlands. They're part of the event coming up tomorrow, the Shrink the Divide 2020, and they're part of the pledge group here, and they're going to talk with us about what's happening tomorrow, give you some details when we come back. News is on the way next. We'll check in with Dr. Bill, and then back to the show. Hour number two up in just minutes.